From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
There are allegations made 6 weeks before the election, and I know what it's done to my campaign.
What has it done to you?
Well, it's caused us to spend more time in a debate like this, talking about this kind of thing, than where I stand in regards to facility closures, which we didn't go to about state prisons, and where we go to with regards to how we're going to put more resources into nursing homes. Those are the kind of things that we're not talking about.
I mean, Mr. Rauner is an Ivy League educated businessman of, you know, some means. And it is just mind-boggling to me. He's not going to go before that board, Micah, and not know who are members of that board when he's asking for $50 million.
Mr. Dillard is part of the problem in Springfield. This is the reason I'm running for governor. Mr. Dillard voted for the $10 billion borrowing that Blagojevich put through.
That bill has saved hundreds of millions of dollars
Senator
over
Dillard,
time.
I just checked the numbers.
Governor Daniels squandered over
$2 billion with this scheme. That has put us in more debt than ever before.
Bill, that's why your business is bankrupt, and that's why he has questionable business
practices. Want to get a lawsuit. My business isn't bankrupt. It's gone through some tough times, but it's not bankrupt. So be careful your words here, Senator Dillard.
Republicans are getting meaner as the election gets closer. You just heard some examples of that. Treasurer Dan Rutherford talking about allegations of misconduct made against him by a former employee. Senator Kirk Dillard of Hinsdale criticizing wealthy investor Bruce Rauner for having ties to a corrupt Blagojevich insider. Rauner in turn attacking Dillard, and then Dillard tussling with State Senator Bill Brady of Bloomington about their voting records and business acumen. We'll talk about the GOP's final couple of debates leading up to the primary election and more on State Week. I'm Amanda Vinicky, filling in for Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel includes in studio Charlie Wheeler. He's the director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at UIS. WUIS State House reporter Brian Mackey and Mike Riopel, the political editor of the Daily Herald. Thanks so much for joining us today, Mike.
Thanks for having me, Amanda.
And Mike, I know you listened to at least portions of those debates. It seems like we've had more of them again as the election nears and we're really in the final countdown. And by golly, the claws are out. Do you have any favorite lines? And more importantly, are they gaining any traction with voters?
Well, that's the question. You know, there's one more debate next week on public TV, the last option for people to try and make a move. And I think that's what you're seeing people trying to do. You know, the first handful of debates were polite. You know, we're talking about policy and workers' compensation reform and pensions and that kind of thing. And now, as you know, Bruce Rauner appears to be the front runner, or at least consider himself the front runner, you're seeing people try to attack him to bring him down and bring themselves up. You see Senator Kirk Dillard and Senator Bill Brady attacking each other to make sure that to try and become the chief alternative to Rauner. People are trying to make that move. How many voters are actually watching these debates, especially considering how low a primary turnout is? How is that going to affect the vote? We'll see very soon. But yeah, you see people trying to make moves. The other candidates haven't been able to have the TV presence Bruce Rauner has. So these debates are a key way for them to get face time with voters. And so if they're going to make moves, they need to do it now. And that's, I think, why you've seen them be a little feistier.
Well, and we'll get back to the commercials that could be airing on TV. As you said, Rauner, the only one who had been at least really blanketing the airwaves, and we may see that change. But before we move on from the debates, Brian, just can you speak to the Rauner and this? Is there any traction being gained in terms of the accusations? It seems that both in particular, Dillard and Brady, are trying to tie Bruce Rauner to Rod Blagojevich and Stuart Levine, who, of course, was on the Teachers Retirement Systems Pension Board. Is that what they can do, or how can Rauner be brought down?
Well, that's a good question, and that's what a lot of people are trying to do. You have, as Mike said, Dillard and Brady trying to position themselves as the alternative. You have labor unions spending hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars, to try and attack Rauner, and now they've decided to kind of break with Dillard, and they're trying to build him up a little bit. But you have a couple of charges out there. You have this one that when Rauner, his company, his big private equity firm, got some money from the teachers' retirement system to manage it, to invest it. And they were initially turned down, and then they came back and were, you know, Rauner made the presentation himself and they got the money. And there have been these questions raised. One of the people on the Teachers Retirement System board is a guy named Stu Levine. I'm not sure actually how that's pronounced. But he is a guy who was very tied in with the Blagojevich, testified in some of those trials. And he apparently had some kind of relationship with a firm that had, you know, was under the umbrella of a Rauner thing. It's very complicated. And because of that, I'm not sure that that penetrates and people really understand
that. This is something that we're all into, and it's so complicated, Charlie.
Well, I think there are a couple other things that might resonate better with your typical Republican primary voter.
Nursing homes.
Well, and just the fact that Bruce Rauner is very close friends with Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel. He's had Emanuel's family vacation at his ranch. And if you recall, 4 years ago, the firestorm for Senator Dillard for having said nice things about Barack Obama as a state senator, in my mind, the connection between Rauner and Emanuel would be much more problematic for a typical Republican voter than the fact that Dillard said something kind about a fellow senator from across the aisle. And then there's this whole situation involving, again, another company which Rauner's firm was involved in, which in essence, from all appearances, took over operation of nursing homes, milked it for all it was worth, provided substandard care, and wound up in a situation where a couple people died and there were suits and court settlements involving large sums of money. The difficulty for the challengers is they don't have any money to go on TV and blanket the state the way Rauner has been doing since, it seems like, forever. And absent that ability to move your message, you guys are right. People don't really watch the debates. Political junkies do, but they're not the ones that are going to control a primary. And somehow or other, if you're one of the challengers to Rauner, you have to figure out a way to get this negative stuff about him out there before Republican primary voters, and you only have like a week and a half to do it.
Well, and Rauner's message, you know, to try and separate himself from basically anyone who's ever been involved in government. You know, I'm the outsider. Everyone else is corrupt. I'm the agent of change. You know, he's been, you know, pushing that message, like you said, for months. So this idea that he has given to Democrats like Emanuel, like Dick Durbin back in the early 2000s, you know, that message I think has been blunted by this idea that he's there to shake things up and you know, make changes.
Well, yeah, and early voting has already begun. You know, and so I know I'm almost wary to give a figure of how much of his own money Rauner has put into the race, because at any given moment he could drop another million and we'd be outdated. But as of this taping, it's over $6 million that Rauner has put into the race. But he is getting a little bit of competition there. Bill Brady up on the airwaves with a small ad buy. And then, Brian, can you talk about Kirk Dillard? And he is both putting money from his own campaign into the going up on air statewide, and then in the Chicago media market, some outside funding, about $700,000 from a group called Republican Fund for Progress and Jobs. What's that all about? Is this finally the outsiders coalescing around a Rauner alternative? And is it too little too late?
Well, that's really the question, and I don't know that we're going to have the answer to that until the primary election actually comes. But this Republican Fund for Progress and Jobs, even the name is controversial. It is founded by a guy named Steve Scherer, who it's an independent PAC. He used to be affiliated with Congressman Aaron Schock and just decided that Rauner needed to be stopped. So he got out there, started raising money, had a lot of union help financially, and has been airing negative ads against Rauner. Well, this week he decided that they would start going behind Dillard. And so now they are going to air pro-Dillard ads. And then Dillard is also getting up on the air with some of his own ads. But as Charlie pointed out, Bruce Rauner has been on the air since forever. And you look at some of the tracking polls we've seen, And Bruce Rauner's identification in place in the polls was last or near the bottom, below 5%, barely anything. And once those TV ads started, I think it was as long ago as October or November of last year, before Christmas, and they were just relentless. You just could not get away from them, especially if you watch Fox News and, you know, are the, you know, which a lot of Republican primary voters do. And so he has just been out there building up his own identification. So, yeah, will it be enough now that he has that Senator Dillard is getting out there and Senator Brady with a smaller ad buy to compete with just over a week left until the election? I'm not sure.
Well, and a union endorsement for Dillard. Two questions. First of all, I mean, is Dillard has he won that battle to be the chief alternative, as you termed it earlier, Mike, to Rauner? And second of all, I mean, he's been endorsed by unions, by AFSCME, as well as by a prominent teachers union. That's rare in a GOP race to have that sort of union involvement. And it really is telling in terms of, I think, the fear on behalf of labor that Rauner would be elected, right?
So it's controversial in particular because of Rauner's message against, quote, government union bosses.
So government union bosses. Right, we'll say it about 10 more times.
So Kirk Dillard in the 2010 primary was endorsed by the Illinois Education Association. Didn't make that big of a splash because it was, you know, there was not this anti-union message happening in the race like there is now. Since there is this major anti-union message coming from Rauner when another candidate gets endorsed by all those unions, that suddenly puts him in direct conflict with another candidate. And so he says, and obviously he has gotten money from labor unions that helped him get on the air. They have a lot of members that could come out and vote, but it's also going to turn off a lot of people who had bought into the Rauner message and a lot of conservatives who aren't huge fans of public employee unions.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know if it's, you know, exactly a wash of 50-50, the positives and negatives. But like Mike said, you're turning off voters because, I mean, a lot of voters don't like the fact that state employees have these quote unquote rich pensions and all this stuff that we've heard in the from politicians and columnists and editorial boards for a long time. On the other hand, Dillard and his running mate Jill Tracy do point out that it's particularly downstate, you do have a lot of Republicans who are union members, and so maybe solidarity will play a role there. I mean, you got to imagine there's a lot of very safe Republican districts downstate that have a lot of prisons, and prison guards are members of the AFSCME union. So if there is somehow some huge surge of turnout and a lot of undecided voters who've been kind of waiting end up going for Dillard, I guess it is conceivable that he could pull out a victory in this primary, but it's certainly a big hill to climb.
Well, and Brian, I know you did a report regarding the union issue in this primary race, and Bruce Rauner, despite saying he's very against government union bosses, has nonetheless maintained that he's not against unions themselves. Unions, however, it seems to be are gearing up for almost a Scott Walker, Wisconsin-level issue. What is Rauner's argument? It's deeper than just, I'm anti-union.
He does, and he makes this point. He differentiates between, you know, these government unions, which would be AFSCME and the Illinois Education Association, Illinois Federation of Teachers, that represent prison guards, home care workers, school teachers, and janitors, people like that. On the other hand, you have trade unions, carpenters, plumbers, electricians, that kind of thing. And he makes a distinction, he says, between, you know, the government unions and these trade unions. Of course, his opponents want to blur that and just try and get union members fired up so that they turn out against him. But his argument, his actual substantive policy argument beyond his robotic repetition of the phrase government union bosses, like it's going out of fashion, to mix a couple of cliches there, his actual policy argument is that unlike a business where a CEO negotiates with a union for wages and benefits, that person is responsible to the shareholders and he has to make sure that the company stays profitable. And if he does a bad job, he is sacked by the shareholders.
Yeah, and rewarded with a golden parachute.
Well, of course, of course. Rauner's argument, and Charlie, I'm sure, would love to weigh in on this, but Rauner's argument is that in the public sector, and he's not the only one. I mean, there have been other people. It was controversial when it was happening, I think, in the past to unionize government workers and let them collectively bargain because politicians are often just focused on the next election, and they're not focused on the long-term fiscal health of the government. And therefore, it's very easy to say, okay, we'll give you your raises, okay, we'll give you the pension sweetener, and not necessarily come up with the money to pay for it now. And that's the argument that Rauner is making about why the entire system is corrupt. He points out that, the union, the same union people leadership who is sitting down and negotiating contracts with the politicians are then making campaign contributions to the politicians. And he calls that quote unquote corrupt and quote unquote immoral.
One may argue, of course, that Rauner is getting plenty of his own contributions, not just his own money going into the race, but a lot of the wealthy individuals who are wealthy Republicans in Illinois have given to his campaign. And Mike, I know you also had a story regarding Rauner and contributions he's made that some candidates have said show a conflict of interest right there and within his own party. Can you explain?
Yeah, I mean, one of the benefits Rauner has of having a lot of money is while his opponents haven't had even enough to get themselves onto air, Rauner's been able to kind of establish some goodwill. He's been giving money to other candidates in primaries and a lot of like county party organizations or township party organizations, and you know, $600, $1,000, $2,000 here and there.
Pocket change to
not,
him.
Right, not huge money to him, but, you know, he helps get his name out to these party organizations that turn out a lot of people, a lot
some
of voters.
Some endorsements, right?
Some endorsements. He got the Cook County Republican Party endorsement. Cook County, by far, turns out the most Republican primary votes they did last time anyway. He got endorsed by that party, and he gave money to the county party and Aaron Del Mar, the chairman. So, yeah, I mean, he's not hurting for money, and so he can use that to spread goodwill among the party without having to worry about, you know, holding on, having a tight budget like the other candidates would. You know, have a tight budget at the end of the race to make sure they have enough time and enough money for all the things they need in the last couple weeks push.
You know, and I think Mike makes a great point because, you know, there was a political science book that came out a few years ago, a collection called The Party Decides. And I think one of the things that makes Rauner unique as a rich guy running in Illinois who, I mean, the tradition is rich guys don't do very well in Illinois. You can ask Governor Gidwitz and Governor McKenna and Governor Oberweis, all in the past, all very, very wealthy, self-funded candidates that did not do very well. But not only is Rauner blanketing the airwaves with ads, but he has worked very hard and spent a lot of money to win support from these local party organizations that are so important in primary elections. And he has won support from a lot of very conservative, wealthy people in this state who in the past might have been a little more skeptical of a candidate who appears to be basically pro-choice and has refused to say where he stands on some other hot-button social issues like same-sex marriage. So, I mean, he really has done an interesting job of building support in the party.
And coming up on State Week in Review, we will talk a little bit more about the election, but also touch on what's currently going on in state government, including just how much Illinois will have to spend in its next budget. You're listening to State Week in Review.
Support for State Week in Review comes from the Illinois State Bar Association, whose activities include proposing and shaping legislation, educating the public, and supporting the courts and the rule of law. Information at IllinoisLawyerFinder.com.
And this is State Week. Our panel, Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and the Daily Herald's Mike Riopel. I'm Amanda Vinicky. And before we leave politics behind, Charlie, can you briefly speak to a poll that came out, that a small poll, granted, but nonetheless one that shows some numbers for Pat Quinn that could say that whatever Republicans decide to do in the primary will have a effect on him because he's going to potentially have a hard time come the general election?
Yeah, I don't recall the exact numbers.
Like, but it was 50% of Democratic voters would be willing to under 50% would be willing to commit to Quinn in a general election.
There are a lot of people who identify themselves as Democrats who aren't ready to say right now, I will vote for Pat Quinn no matter what. I look at those polls as being kind of interesting but not particularly insightful in that we're still a long ways from the general election. We still haven't gotten through the primary. And so people are asking or being asked, what do you think of Pat Quinn, you know, kind of in a vacuum, if you will. When it comes down to November and people go in the polling place, it'll be Pat Quinn versus whoever wins the Republican primary, and there'll be other candidates on the ballot. I mean, when Rod Blagojevich was elected the second time, beating Judy Bartopinka, he did not have a majority of the votes. When you factor in the other candidates, he had like 49-point-something%. And so until you know what the lineup is, it's not really meaningful. People who are Democrats can say, well, I don't really like Pat Quinn. But on the other hand, in November, do I want Quinn more than Rauner? Do I hold my nose and vote for the lesser of two evils or more than Brady, which a lot of people did last time around, or more than Dillard or more than Rutherford? I mean, and those are the choices. And when people are faced with those choices, it becomes, for many people, the lesser of two evils.
And
I do think it's interesting, though, Charlie, to your point about, you know, Governor Quinn is not really running a media reelection campaign. I mean, certainly he goes all over the state cutting ribbons. He's been doing that for a year now and making, you know, getting his name out there with so-called free media. But Bruce Rauner, if he is the nominee, is not wasting any time. He is already running ads against Quinn. And I think back to Blagojevich and Topinka and how he did not have nearly as bruising a primary as she did. And right after the primary election, he was able to go start advertising and beating up Judy Bartopinka. What's she thinking? I don't know if anyone remembers that. It was just endless.
Everyone.
You could not escape that phrase. What's she thinking? And I kind of wonder if the same kind of media advantage and head start that Bruce Rauner got on his primary opponents, again, if he is the nominee, if Republican voters select him, he will already have a head start against Quinn in going into the general election.
Particularly given that Quinn could have a bruising time with Illinois' budget. The Senate agreed this week with basically setting Illinois' revenue level and therefore what Illinois could therefore spend at $34.5 billion. That's a big cut. Mike, can you address, though, Republicans are in the House went along with that number, not so much in the Senate. They had a different take, kind of saying that they thought that was lowballing it.
Yeah, I mean, this happened several years ago, even when it got to voting on the actual budget. House Republicans went along with it once, or most of them did, and Senate Republicans didn't. And even House Republicans that voted for this revenue number will be careful to say, we don't think you should spend all of it. You have a lot of outstanding bills that still need to be paid. So Pat Quinn's budget address is, what, 6, 7, 8 days after the Republican primary? So like you say, that that big partisan battle is going to manifest itself right after the election.
And, of course, with the income tax expiring midway through the next fiscal year.
Well, right. and that's why the revenue estimate that has been adopted now officially by both chambers is roughly $1 billion less than the revenues for the current budget. And add in the increased costs that are unavoidable unless you change the law. For example, paying a couple $100 million more into the pension funds, paying increased costs for state employees' insurance, debt service. Factor those in, and the cuts that are going to have to be made from the operation budget are more in the neighborhood of $2.5 billion. And this should come as no surprise to anyone. I mean, Senate President John Cullerton, for example, has been talking about this since last fall.
Well, and this week, Charlie, the Civic Federation, an independent organization, came out with its recommendations and said, don't let the tax increase expire as it should. Keep it to help pay down that backlog of bills, and then also raise the notion of taxing retirement income in Illinois. Briefly, can you address your thoughts on that? Are those valid recommendations or even politically feasible ones?
I would say that under the circumstances, they are probably preferable to the alternative. For example, the what would you say, a preliminary allocation of the pain, if you will. So, for example, education, K to 12 education being cut by more than $1 billion. And this is at a time when the State Board of Education says we need $1 billion more just to meet the existing law in terms of the general state aid formula. So I think it's going to be very bloody, very brutal. There won't be any Republicans who vote for it. The Democrats are going to have to do it all on their own. And the Republicans will see that as an opportunity to criticize Democrats for cutting education. And using it for wasted mismanagement and abuse and all that stuff, you know, the standard rhetoric. But I think what the Civic Federation is suggesting is that the state's revenue structure needs to be looked at. We're one of the very few states with an income tax that doesn't include any retirement income at all as part of that tax base. And their suggestion was, well, maybe we should do this so we could bring in maybe as much as $1 billion in new revenue. Now, you would probably structure it so some elderly widow isn't paying it on her $18,000 a year in Social Security. But on the other hand, some executive who, as I said earlier, retires with a golden parachute is maybe paying it on his $1 million a year plus.
And before we and another election issue that I think could come up could be, if, especially, who knows, Rauner and all of the Republicans, actually Dillard, all say that they are in favor of the Second Amendment this week. Those who applied began to get concealed carry permits, and they were in the State House both celebrating but also campaigning against new restrictions. So looking to the State House, how big of a deal is the gun issue going to be this session, and this election? Who's going to win, the anti-gun folks or the pro-gun carrying folks?
It seems to me that the momentum might be on the side of no momentum, that they did this big major concealed carry bill last year that had been around the State House for decades, finally passed. And you have people on both sides now, both wanting to make it more restrictive and, like the ralliers wanted this week, make it less restrictive. There are many restrictions. You can't carry a gun into government buildings or on playgrounds and on trains and many other places. Makes it kind of confusing. I mean, to a gun owner who doesn't want to break the law, could get caught up if he ends up accidentally in the wrong spot. That's what they're arguing for. Let's loosen the restrictions. I think it sounds to me like some of the people who are behind the law to begin with, would like to see it loosened up a little bit, but I think you might see people try and let it play out and see what happens.
I think Mike's right, and to his point, though, just because there's no momentum and nothing might happen doesn't mean that people won't still be clamoring and making a lot of noise, because you don't actually have to pass bills. That's the beauty of an election year.
Exactly.
They can both print the same mailers. Representative so-and-so fought to make you safer by banning guns in certain places or by allowing you to carry guns in certain places. I mean, the advertisements write themselves, and because this is an election year, both sides, I think, of the gun issue will be playing to their constituents.
And before we wrap up the show, we heard, well, we didn't actually hear from his words, but a press release is issued from House Speaker Mike Madigan. Illinois doesn't have a lot of money, but he's willing to give at least potentially $100 million to do what, State House?
Yeah, this is to get the President Barack Obama Presidential Library and Museum, I guess is what it would be called. We've also heard interest from Hawaii, which would be quite a commute, although I would be more than willing to go there for the opening if you wanted to send me, Amanda.
Yeah, I don't think so, Brian, but we'll see actually if we get to that point. I'm afraid that it is time to wrap up this show as Illinois awaits perhaps getting the Presidential Museum. Thanks so much to our guest, the Daily Herald's Mike Riopel. You can get a podcast of the show by going to WUIS.org or find it on iTunes by searching State Week in Review. Production assistance for program today was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Amanda Vinicky. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.